Hello, Marlins fans, and welcome to Swings and Mishes, a Five Reasons Sports podcast hosted by Craig Mish. I am your producer, Jeremy Taché, and we're very excited to be bringing you episode one of Swings and Mishes. Today, we will have Marlins President of Baseball Operations, Michael Hill, on with us to discuss all sorts of different topics within the Marlins, present and past. And Craig, why don't we go ahead and get started off the top with more of what's been going on with the Marlins this season, sort of setting the table for what's been going on.
Yeah, thanks, Jeremy. It's going to be an exciting time, I think, to take people behind the curtain a little bit as to what's going on with the Marlins. As we talked a little bit on episode zero, I've covered this team for a long time, and definitely a different time for the organization. New ownership, new direction, and here we are almost completed with the first year of that happening. So it's kind of a look back and a look forward, I think, a little bit. But for the most part, I think what we'll do until we bring Mike on is more or less talk about this season. And I think that's kind of the focus at this point with so much that has happened in the past. And on the Five Reasons Network, you can hear I did a whole podcast on that and what the past was like under previous ownership. But under this new ownership, I mean, here we are. The year is almost over. We got about a little bit over a month until it is finished. The 2018 on-field product has been a mixed bag, to say the least, Jeremy. You look at the first 3-4 months of the season, And I didn't think it was all that bad, to be honest with you. I kind of enjoyed it. I enjoyed covering the team, even going back to spring training. I think they probably won a few more games than people would have thought they did. At the beginning of the season, I thought they'd win about 68. And that was a really high number for some people. Most people guaranteed them losing 100 games. But what happened in the first half was we saw some really good pitching performances. And we saw the emergence of a couple of nice young players that the Marlins have. I think specifically the two guys in I would say April, May, and into June, that really were the most impressive from a pitching perspective was Caleb Smith until he got hurt. I think Caleb Smith, if he's healthy, is going to be a big part of this rotation moving forward. We'll just kind of have to see how that surgery went and how the rehab went. But I thought maybe he was the single biggest positive and surprise for this team until he got hurt. Brian Anderson, who is still playing right now and playing at a high level for a rookie, I thought has also had a really nice season transitioning from third base to right field. And then let's be honest, what really carried this team in April, May, and June was the bullpen. I mean, all these years, the Marlins have been trying to find a way to build a super bullpen or even just to have a capable bullpen. And they've figured out different guys to use in the ninth inning. But when they had that thing rolling, especially from May, June, and into July with Brad Ziegler and Drew Steckenrider and Kyle Barraclough, it really shortened the game for the team. They didn't need these pitchers to go deep into the game. So there's been a lot of really nice spots and some good things that have happened. But let's be honest, this is a team that is going to lose close to 100 games this season. It's a team in a first year of a build. So I am not surprised that after the month of July, they really went south for the most part.
Right.
And I would say that based on the competition that they have the rest of the way, we'll probably see a trend like this continue. But I thought it would have been worse. I thought it could have been worse. And I think most people predicted it would be worse. So from my perspective, it really hasn't been all that bad. There's still a lot of questions about the future of this team. And even in 2019, because when you start removing position players like Justin Bour and veterans like Maybin and Ziegler, are those going to be replaced? Like who is going to be on this team next year to try and win some games? That there are some questions that'll need to be answered there. But in 2018, Jeremy, this is pretty much what I thought it would be. And maybe a little bit better in the first half. And then obviously we've seen things go completely the other way in the second half.
I have to agree with you. You know, in 2018, I think we all thought this team was going to be such a bore to watch, but this was going to be a team that was not entertaining whatsoever. And through the first few months of the season, they were a really fun team to watch with a lot of young players and parts of the future that give you hope going forward. And we've even seen a little bit of that in the last few days with Austin Dean. Now the Marlins win a couple of games after going through a rough, rough stretch. And we go into today, as this podcast is released, the Marlins play the Yankees. And it's the homecoming for Giancarlo Stanton, the former NL MVP with the Marlins, came up through the system, the $300+ million man. And he's back with the Yankees. And you know, Craig, I know you were all over that story when Stanton was here and when Stanton was being traded. And, you know, what type of memories does that bring back for you with him coming back to Miami?
You know, he was a great player when he was here. He got the big contract. And then I think that most people focus in on the trade and the fact that he would only accept a deal to four teams in Major League Baseball, which is what I reported this offseason. And lucky for him, he ended up going to the New York Yankees because the other three teams the Marlins couldn't work out a deal with. And we'll talk to, you know, Mike Hill about that coming up in just a few minutes. But, you know, I remember, you know, a player that played at a very high level, but really some missed opportunities, I think, just as a team. So, you know, we'll talk more about that with Mike Hill and kind of find out what his thought process is on, you know, drafting the player and then moving on and seeing him play well, then giving him a contract, and then trading him away. I think those are all really interesting points that Mike will touch on. But for me, it'll be interesting to see the reception that he gets back here in South Florida, because I don't think there's any doubt that, I mean, this is a surreal feeling seeing somebody that was the NL MVP a year ago and then traded and then comes back to, you know, honestly try and beat his old team. Right. Tonight and on Wednesday. So it'll be fun. It'll be cool. It'll be interesting. And I think that, you know, from my perspective, having a lot of the information this offseason on where he potentially was going to go and the visits that he was going to make, it was really an exciting time for me because I was able to take people, you know, behind the curtain, give them a little inside information as to how things were going to play out. Honestly, I did not think that he was going to end up with the Yankees. I did not see that happening. I thought that he would end up with the Dodgers or he would be forced into a situation where he would sign with the Cardinals or Giants. But he is now a player of the past with the Marlins. He'll be the present for the next couple of days. Right. And then we probably won't see Stanton Jeremy for a few years.
Yeah, it's going to be a while until we see him back here. It's exciting to see him back here as someone that, you know, watched him come up with the team. And, you know, I know you had the same thing. It's exciting to see Giancarlo Stanton back here. And I'm sure he's going to get a very warm reception, regardless of how things sort of tailed off at the end there. I think the fans appreciate what he brought as baseball fans and as a baseball player. And with all that being said, it's time that we move on to your conversation with President of Baseball Operations for the Miami Marlins, Michael Hill.
This is the Five Reasons Sports Network, sports by Miami for Miami on demand. We now have 10 podcasts in the network posting roughly 15 times per week. All can be found on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and several cross-platform apps. We are on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Here's some of what you missed last week on Miami Heat Beat.
I'm in love with this young core. I think they have three really solid starter-type players in Winslow, Jay Rich, and Bam.
You know, it's funny. I was literally just thinking that to myself like 5 minutes ago, but the fact that Gianni agrees with me really makes me second guess it.
If you want to get involved as a sponsor or a contributor, reach out to us at number 5 Reason Sports on Twitter. And don't forget to punch 5 Reasons in your search bar and then hit subscribe.
All right. Thanks very much, Jeremy. And we do have the president of baseball operations of the Miami Marlins, Michael Hill, with us for our first ever episode here of Swings and Misses. Of course, Michael has been with the organization for more than 15 years, very well schooled, went to Harvard. There's so many things that people don't know about Mike that I think that one day when we have the time, I would love to dive into just who he is as a person, because really interesting, all the things that he's gone through throughout his career to get to this point. But that will be for another podcast. On today's podcast, let's dive in to the present, the future, and even some of the past of the Miami Marlins history with the president of baseball operations of the Marlins. Michael Hill joins me. Michael, thank you so much for spending some time with me here on our first episode of Swings and Misses. I know this is something that means a lot to me, so I just wanted to say thank you for doing this. Appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, Craig.
Mike, it's definitely a new day for Marlins baseball. There's no question about that. I'm actually happy the team is coming off a couple of wins here to get you in a good mood before this Yankee series comes up here Tuesday and Wednesday. But I think what I'd like to start off with, and I think that most people have this question, Mike, and I would ask it too, because I'm around the team and I see the team a lot, but I would ask you about the tangible things that have changed with this new ownership that maybe, Mike, that fans don't necessarily see and they don't hear about. And what are those tangible things that make this organization different now than when it was previously in the previous years that you spent with the club?
Well, that's a very good, interesting question, Craig, and a good one to start with. Now I'm starting my 16th season with the Marlins, so as you said, I've been here and seen a lot, and I think the biggest thing for me, and I've said this whenever I've had opportunity to speak to groups, you know, the commitment that this new ownership has to this community is something that is palpable. I mean, you feel it, you felt it when Derek and Mr. Sherman were introduced, you know, back in October. And I think that's an overriding sentiment that I think never gets lost. It's not lost upon me, just their commitment. And with that commitment, I think is a change in philosophy, a different mindset. One that, you know, when you look at just some, and I can speak from baseball operations standpoint, you look at you know, going back to the start of spring training and our captain's camp where, you know, we brought in our two dozen top prospects and just talk to our future, you know, the future players who are going to win championships about leadership on the field, about leadership in the community, you know, as they went out and did community service at local hospitals and at local schools. And you look at as we went into the season and, you know, for the first time in my history, we were able to spend over our pool in the amateur draft. And that was, you know, directly allowed us to sign, you know, Will Banfield with our third pick where, you know, where he was going to Vanderbilt. We had identified the talent and ownership supported us as we went out to go over slot to sign him. The fact that, you know, for the first time in my time, you know, we're able to actually spend our international money and are being aggressive in trades to acquire more international money because we know that, you know, we need players and the larger applicant pool of players you're able to go out and sign, you're giving yourself a better opportunity, you know, to win games in the now and in the future. And I think those all came as breath of fresh air for me. Just, you know, having had the challenges of the past and the limitations to know that this ownership is in it for the long haul and want to build this organization, a first-class organization, the right way and put us in a position to win many championships here in South Florida.
Yeah, and Mike, I do want to get into the international a little bit later in our conversation, but I do want to focus more here on the draft because I think that when you're building a team from scratch, essentially, which is, I know what the Marlins are doing, the build as what it's being called, the draft is going to be crucial to the success of the club. And if you don't mind, I'd love for you to share how that also has changed philosophically. You mentioned a couple names there that I'd like to ask you about, you know, Connor Scott and Banfield, how these players were drafted, Mike, by the organization and by you, and how that process in the draft was different than it had been in years past.
Now, and you're 100% correct, Craig, in that you can't build anything sustainable without a strong minor league system. And a big reason why, you know, there were some trades made this offseason is because we did not have depth. We didn't have depth at any level. And you can't have something sustainable without that. And a big part of building that sustainability is through the draft. International is also a big part of that. And as you said, I guess we'll talk about that later. But whenever you have opportunities to acquire talent, it's important that you maximize those efforts. When we approached the draft this year, you know, Gary Dembo, who's come aboard as our vice president of scouting and player development, and Dan Greenlee, you know, who's our director of player personnel, along with DJ Zvillik, and Stan Meek, and you know, all of our area guys, you know, lots of hours, lots of days, nights away from home, and making sure you get your evaluations. But as we got into the room, you know, our guys all felt comfortable that we'd be given the opportunity to draft the best available talent on the board. Obviously, as we looked philosophically to build our organization, we looked up the middle of the field. You know, the premium positions, you know, catchers, pitchers, shortstops, center fielders, athletes. And I think we couldn't have been happier with our first draft with Connor Scott as the 13th pick overall from Plant High School in Tampa, a rare combination of speed and power in center field, but one that, you know, we're extremely excited about We followed up Connor Scott with Osiris Johnson, a very athletic shortstop from the Northern California area, cousin or nephew of Jimmy Rollins. And our third pick was high school catcher from the Georgia area, Will Banfield. And those three, along with Tristan Pompey, who we took with the 89th selection at the University of Kentucky, have all hit the ground running, all doing very well in their first summers of professional baseball. The three high school players, which has never happened. One thing, at least in my 16 years, we took three high school players with our first three picks, and they had so much success that they were subsequently promoted to Greensboro. So the fact that we were able to get them to Greensboro is a tremendous statement to their ability, to their work ethic, and great for this organization to get those guys up to Greensboro in their first summers in professional baseball. And then Tristan Pompey, who was a college draft pick, has able to make it to Advanced Day in Jupiter, and is hitting in the middle of that lineup. He's a switch hitter with power from both sides of the field, and we're excited that we were able to get him a first-round talent that we were able to get in the third round.
Mike, as a follow-up to that, through the years, it's been interesting with the draft picks that were made previously, and I don't want to dive into those, but I think that the one overlying factor that was said to me and has been said to me is that we may never know if the Marlins had good drafts or bad drafts, because the results speak for themselves in the last 10 years. But at the same time, Mike, the development of the players is the thing that seems to always come back and asking the question, how do you develop players? What is the plan to develop these players? How are the Marlins spending money to get these kids, as you've just mentioned, from the GCL to Greensboro and beyond? And so if you wouldn't mind expanding a little bit on that and how player development is also a big part of what you guys are doing.
Player development is definitely a big part, as is, the scouting of the players. You want to make sure you're scouting the right guys and you're getting the, players with tools and the ability that you think, with that development will continue to improve and become impactful major league players. And from our standpoint, Jerry Dimble oversees, along with Dick Scott and his staff, oversees our minor leagues. And you want the best and brightest. I think when you have experienced, knowledgeable coaches, they impart your philosophy. They impart the structure necessary to give your players the reps. Position players, getting them the at-bats and the repetition to become successful major league hitters. And from a pitching standpoint, for knowledgeable, experienced pitching coaches to continue to improve those young, raw arms. The one thing that, we scout size when you talk about pitchers. You want big, you want physical, you want arm strength, you want good arm action when you're talking about scouting pitching, and it's up to our pitching coaches to mold that young talent and allow them to get the necessary repetitions that they need to prepare them, to be successful major leaguers.
Mike, you've been a part of this franchise for a long time. The new boss is the CEO, Derek Jeter, and he's very involved on a day-to-day basis. There's no question about it. We know exactly, what is going on and how this organization is moving forward. But I think fans are really intrigued with every story that is said or written from Derek Jeter. I would ask you, what would be one thing that fans would be surprised to know about how heavily involved he is in the organization in terms of day-to-day operations? What would fans be surprised to know about Derek Jeter, Mike, that you've noticed?
Well, fans of Derek Jeter know how committed, how dedicated he was as a player. So I don't think I could say anything that would surprise anyone. If anybody had seen him and saw how he approached his career and with the professionalism, the attention to detail, as a player, I think that would probably be the biggest thing that I would talk about. That's been, most impressive for me is carried over in his new role. I think he understands what it means to be a winner, to be a part of a championship team, to be a part of a championship organization. And, you know, it's his goal every day to impart that wisdom, you know, to me and to us and to this organization, because that's our goal. And, you know, that's the part of it where, you know, I don't think people would be surprised, because that's who he is. And that's why there is so much excitement about what the future holds, because, you know, he knows how to win. And I think those little details have been, you know, it's been exciting for me, and it's made, you know, everything that we do that more exciting, because you know that you're building towards something that's going to be special.
The Yankees are in town. That's Derek Jeter's former team, of course, and he'll go into the Hall of Fame in really close amount of time here as clearly a member of the Yankees, now the owner of the Miami Marlins. And we're speaking with Michael Hill, the president of baseball operations of the Marlins. That means, Mike, that the reunion tour continues. We've seen Marcel Ozuna come back to town. We saw Christian Yelich come back to town. Giancarlo Stanton now comes back to town for a couple of days. And, Mike, of course, you were part of the team that found him and gets a lot of credit for that. You drafted him. You were part of the organization that gave him the contract and, ironically, the team that also traded him this past offseason. So let's dive in here for people a little bit on Stanton, if you will. Was this a difficult process, Mike, this offseason, as it was portrayed, to trade him with all the things that were said, by me included, of the teams that he was willing to go to and the no trade clause? I can only imagine the emotions that you've gone through a lot of stuff with the Marlins, but the emotions of, hey, we drafted this player, we gave him the extension, and now here we are trying to trade him. If you wouldn't mind speaking on that for a couple of minutes.
Whenever you're dealing with making a trade, when a full no trade is involved, there are going to be challenges. And the one thing that I know, and Giancarlo has said as well, is that, you know, there was complete transparency, and there was, if anything, over communication as we went through the process with him, so that he was fully aware of what was going on every step of the way, because we knew ultimately that it was his call. You know, he had the no trade, and, you know, it was said to him face to face that we understand that you have a no trade, and if you choose to not waive it, you know, we're prepared to have you here and for you to be a Miami Marlin for, you know, for the duration of your contract. But at the same time, he understood that, you know, there were changes that needed to be made. We did not have a deep minor league system. We weren't in a position to compete because we just didn't have enough depth. Changes needed to be made. And we were open and honest with him. He was open and honest that he didn't want to be a part of it. And, you know, the negotiations were detailed pretty accurately in terms of where he wanted to go. And ultimately, you know, it happened where, you know, one of the teams where he wanted to go on the third try, we were able to, come to an agreement and get him moved. But, you know, when I'm very realistic, you know me, Craig, I understand that when you have a no trade in place that, you know, you're at the mercy of the player. And ultimately, I think that was the case because we had, you know, two other potential trades in place for him that he did not, you know, he didn't want to go to those two places. And so it was incumbent to try to get him where he wanted to go or to welcome him back. And, you know, it worked out where we were able to make a deal with the Yankees. You know, the no trade was, you know, a challenge, and but it was one where thankfully we were able to work it out, and we got good players back in return, and it really set up the offseason for some of the other trades where we were able to add, you know, 27 players to our minor league system and really add layers of depth that we hadn't had.
Yeah, and as a follow-up, Mike, I just wanted to ask you this because I know that when, you know, from a lot of general managers and vice presidents and you, of course, now as president, my quick follow-up to that is there obviously has to be a part of an emotional attachment to a player when here you are, the guy who was in the organization that was responsible for finding this kid and giving him that extension. And then, as you mentioned, and this is kind of where I'm leading to, the difficulty of actually making the trade. And so my question is, maybe more directly on this, is that are feelings good now? Do you feel like everything is okay between you and him? And when he comes back Tuesday and Wednesday, I'm assuming the fans will give him a very nice round of applause. But we saw Mike when he went to when the Marlins went to New York, he didn't want to talk to the media at that time, so that led people to believe that maybe there's, you know, still something there. Is there still anything there, or this is just over and done with and everybody is cool?
It was over and done with the second he was traded. We've never had any issues. I gave him a big hug because I was there in Orlando when we finally consummated the deal, and I met with him and gave him a big hug and wished him the best of luck, except when he was playing against the Marlins. But you know, obviously with all of these players, I mean, I have three boys at home, but you definitely have a bond with every player you come across in your career. And you know, I gave Marcelo Zuna a big hug when he came through. I gave Yelly a big hug when he came through. These players know, you know, who I am. They know where my heart is. We all have jobs to do. And my job was to put this organization in a position to win year in and year out. And, you know, we weren't in that position with those players, you know, on the roster. We needed to make some changes. And, you know, as I said, you know, we were able to bring back 27 players with those various deals. But my relationship hadn't changed with any of those guys. If I bump into G in the concourse, I plan to go out to the field and see him. If I can get to him, I'll give him a big hug and you know, tell him he can get hot when he leaves town.
Yeah, and it's really interesting now, Mike, because not that you need defense, but what we heard all offseason was if you had kept all these guys together and just got a couple of pitchers, then the team, you know, would have been better off, or they would have been in the postseason. And now you don't hear that anymore, Mike, because I'm wondering who those pitchers were, you know? Like, I mean, who would they have been? Alex Cobb, Lance Lynn, Yu Darvish? I have no idea. So, yeah, I mean, it made perfect sense to me, Mike, on that deal. Now, here's what I think doesn't make a lot of sense to a lot of fans, and so this will be the one that that is most curious for me. Because Christian Yelich, who is having a phenomenal season with the Milwaukee Brewers and are very close to the postseason. We're not sure if they'll get in or not, but he has really gotten to that level that I think that most people thought that he would be. And I think from the outside looking in, Mike, now I understand why Christian Yelich was traded based on things that I've heard, but without really knowing for sure, Yelich is an athletic player, a gold glove type player, and a very good player at that. So now looking back on it, regardless of the outcome of the players, which I'll ask you about in a minute, it does seem to fans, Mike, a little bizarre that Yelich was traded, given that he's kind of the kind of player, in terms of on the field, that you'd want to have in this franchise who's locked up long term. So if you wouldn't mind diving into that a little bit on maybe why Christian Yelich was traded and that subject, because I think a lot of fans at this point still don't really know why.
I'd say that's a fair question. And, you know, we addressed it when we traded him at the time. You know, Christian Yelich is a very talented player, no doubt about it. And I think all the players that went out, you know, that we traded were talented players. But as I said, you know, we turned Christian Yelich and Giancarlo Stanton and D. Gordon and Marcelo Zuna into 27 players. And where we were as an organization, with all of those good players, we won 77 games. We did not have enough depth. We weren't just two pitchers away. We've already used 10 starting pitchers this season alone, and we're in the middle of August. We just didn't have enough depth. And, you know, I think we all acknowledge that Christian Yelich is a very good player, and I think we knew exactly what we were trading away. But Christian Yelich turned into Lewis Brinson and Monty Harrison and Ehsan Diaz and Jordan Yamamoto. Four players that, you know, our fans may not know their names. And they know Lewis, but they may not know the others. But, you know, as we continue to win games and win championships, they will know about these names. And I think the overriding theme that we were trying to to make known to everyone who was listening, fans, the media, was that as we were constituted at the time, as we were built, was not working and it was not sustainable. There wasn't an opportunity to build with that group and continue to try to win because there was nothing behind them. We didn't have the starting pitching. We didn't have the position player depth. We didn't have depth anywhere to allow us to be a sustainable organization. And that's really what forced the trade. I'd be interested to, you said, you know what you've heard. I'd be interested to know what that means.
Sure, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, this was strictly a baseball move where, you know, we were trying to maximize the, you know, the value of an asset and get multiple pieces back to allow us to build a more sustainable product.
Okay. So Mike, the notion that as to what I've heard is that everyone knew the kind of player that Christian Yelich was on the field. There is no doubt about it. But as the organization made decisions to move forward, they had to ask themselves, meaning you, the question of, is Christian Yelich the guy that we want around this team and in this clubhouse when we have 22 young players that are going to need veterans like Martin Prado at the time, like Brad Ziegler, like Cameron Maben, like JT Realmuto, that you decided to keep, and the organization, because he had asked for a trade and at the same time thought, you know, something, maybe this would be best for the organization, put him in a position where he can go and do whatever he wants to do. And at the same time, we have a deal here with the Brewers where we feel like we're getting back a couple of potential all-stars here, four good players. This works out for both of us. But Mike, I just don't know that if Christian Yelich is a great, if he is indeed a great clubhouse influence and he is the kind of player that you want to build around, why he would be traded. That was kind of the direction that I was going. I wasn't planning on telling you that, but that's,
yeah. No, that's fine, Craig. I think the bottom line is, you know, my job and my goal is always to do what's best for the Miami Marlins. And I think in the trading of Christian Yelich, we were just maximizing an asset. As I said, you know, you don't see upper level position players move at all, especially, you know, one that's already in the big leagues and two that are very close to the big leagues. And then a fourth piece who's a pitcher that's close to the big leagues. You don't see that happen very often. And, you know, when you take a player, because he is so good, when you take Christian Yelich to market, you don't make the deal unless you get exactly what you want. And I think that's where we were at. You know, we were similarly, you know, not in the sense that he had a no trade, but, you know, we weren't going to move Christian Yelich unless it was a deal that made tremendous sense for the Miami Marlins. And in acquiring three upper level position players and an upper level, you know, mid rotation starting piece, we felt like we maximized our value in Christian Yelich.
Okay. And I think that also, I want to dive into the players in that trade here for a minute, because I think it may end up being the one trade that we look at through the years. The drafts, I think, to me, is the key, Mike. I mean, there's no doubt. But this one trade did get you back four players. And so Yamamoto is a young player and still learning his way. Diaz, who you mentioned, the second baseman, a lot of people feel like he could be the starting second baseman on your team next year. So that's a good sign. Harrison has hit a lot of home runs and maybe somewhat of a work in progress at Double A. We'll see what he does next year. But let's talk about Lewis Brinson then for a minute, because he is, if I'm not mistaken, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, he was the centerpiece of the trade that brought back Yelich in the offseason. I'll never forget when this trade happened. Of course, I said it would happen before to Milwaukee. I got that one right, Mike. But I also, when Cliff Floyd texted me and said, hey, tell me about this Lewis Brinson. Is there a reason? I'm like, man, this Lewis Brinson, he's going to be a star in the big leagues. I remember him growing up playing down here, and I think he's going to be an all-star, and I think he's going to be great. So, you know, he had a great offseason, Mike. I mean, he did all the right things. He was fantastic for the fan base, and he went on television everywhere in the clubhouse right now. He was a gem. He is a great kid, and his defense has been good, maybe even all-star caliber. But otherwise, Mike, it has been a tough year. offensively for Lewis, and then, of course, he got hurt. So I would ask you, what should we look for in the development now of Lewis Brinson to get him up to that point where he delivers on being the centerpiece of the deal, if, in fact, you do feel that he is the centerpiece of the deal?
I don't want to single out any one player. He was probably the most recognizable because he had touched the big leagues. But we aren't talking about a lot of seasoned veterans that came back in this trade. But I think you're talking about tremendous talent that came back in the trade. And Lewis, you know, our fans here in South Florida have gotten to see the good and the bad. And I think you'd be hard-pressed to find many young players that step right into the big leagues and immediately have success. You know, every young player, probably with the exception of Miguel Cabrera that we've brought up, has had ups and downs in their first season. But the biggest thing that we look towards and why we get encouraged is just how they're working. And what we see on an everyday basis has us really excited about what the future holds for Lewis Brinson and for the other three players. When you talk about young players and their growth, you know, it's a process of eventually getting to that final product because there isn't a higher level in baseball. These are the greatest players in the world. And there is so much information out there, you know, the opposing teams with advanced scouting and advanced metrics. You know, their job is to get our guys out. So it is continually a game of adjustments and making adjustments and adjusting to the adjustments that have been made to you and until you get that comfort level. And, you know, not to get off of Lewis Brinson, but a young player who had went through that and got through it quicker is Brian Anderson, where now you see a comfort level at the major league level and now his true ability is able to show. I think that is where we will get with Lewis. He was trending the right way when he hurt his hip. If you look at his numbers, the last 2 months before he got hurt, he was hitting 270. So the work that Mike Pagliarulo and Frankie Minichino and Don Mattingly put in with him on a daily basis and getting him, you know, there was some cleanup that needed to be done with his swing. With his swing mechanics, with his swing path. And those things are very difficult to do when you're trying to compete every night against the best pitchers in the world. And we've got a lot of good ones in our division. So we understood. We went into this with our eyes wide open. And Derek and I spent many evenings talking as we watched him perform because we know it's a process. And that's why when you're dealing with young players, you preach patience because there is a learning curve, and we chose to do that learning curve at the major league level for Lewis because he had dominated AAA, and we felt like he would get the most learning at the major league level. You know, the one thing that, you know, we tried to do philosophically as an organization is to do that in the minor leagues, you know, not to rush guys to the big leagues, which is something that, you know, we did a lot in the past. A guy would have a few good weeks at AA, and next thing you know, he was in the big leagues. You know, we've tried to build up enough depth so that guys could master a level. You know, Austin Dean mastered AA. We got him AAA. He continued to dominate until he forced our hands and made his way to the big leagues. Pablo Lopez, the same thing. We put him in the appropriate level. He dominated that level. He continued his success at the next level at AAA, to the point where they force your hand, they force their way to the big leagues. And that's really, Craig, why when you talk about young talent, you know, and people try to put timelines on when they come, it's truly up to the player. And, you know, circling back to Lewis Brinson, his work ethic has been tremendous. The work that he's put in with our coaches has been tremendous. And I'm excited for what the future holds for him, as well as the other players involved with the trade that you brought up. Eason Diaz, you know, went from a successful stint at AA to hitting in the middle of the order at AAA, and a tremendously talented middle infielder. Monty Harrison, as you mentioned, leading our minor leagues in home runs. Still work to do because we need to cut down on the strikeouts, but an extremely exciting player. And one that when he gets to South Florida, our fans will be extremely excited to see.
Boy, Mike, it sounds like, I mean, this is shocking that you guys, you know, traded away and brought up players too fast in the past. This is all news to me. I didn't know that. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, so let's get to JT Realmuto, who is the best player on the Marlins. He was an all-star this past season. And everyone wants to know if he's part of the future of the club, or inevitably, if he's not, potentially if he will be traded this offseason. So, Mike, I will ask you that question about JT Realmuto and his future with the club and whether or not he will get a contract offer this offseason.
Well, I just want to say that JT Realmuto, you know, it's great that he's finally been recognized, you know, in the baseball world, you know, for the talent that he is, a young high school shortstop who caught once in high school, and we just happened to be in the stands when he did it, and converted him to catcher, and has always been an above average athlete, and it's nice for, you know, the baseball world to finally see him and recognize him for the talent that he is. He is having a tremendous season on both ends of the ball, you know, offensively, what he's doing to help our pitching staff, and you know, anyone who knows him, they know his commitment, his dedication, and right now, Craig, we're focused on, you know, trying to prepare and beat the Yankees these next 2 days, and as I've said, at the appropriate time, we want to talk to him, and hopefully this is something that we can work out moving forward.
All right, we'll keep an eye on that this offseason. One more question for you, because this is one that, you know, from my perspective, I am not all that educated on, because you guys really in the past hadn't dove very deeply into the international market. You mentioned it. I think it's been mentioned several times by the organization how important it is, and potentially, like, the rookie of the year in the AL, the rookie of the year in the NL, like, all the best players are coming from the international market. Maybe not all of them, but a lot of them. And then there's this player from Cuba that keeps being brought up, as you know, named Victor Mesa, who has not been yet eligible in terms of free agency to sign with a team, but the notion is that at some point that he will, and of course we hear these rumors, substantiated even by myself, that potentially the Marlins would be involved in thinking of trying to sign Victor Mesa. So this is another question that I would have for you, and I don't know how much you can speak about a player who hasn't even been declared a free agent yet, but I would like to ask you about this Victor Mesa from Cuba.
I think it's just cool that you can say a player with two first names. I really like that.
Is that part of the deal? You've got to have the jersey Victor on the back, right? I mean, it's got to be, right?
But no, you know, we're in Miami. You know, we're the gateway to Americas, and this should be a destination spot. You know, our game is a third Latin. We're the gateway to the Americas. You know, this is an area where there was an obvious opportunity for us to improve. And I touched on it earlier when we talked about the change with new ownership. You know, this was an area where we just weren't maximizing our efforts. And it's nice that ownership is fully supportive and allowing us to do everything in our power to be the best team in this region, in the gateway to America, and for Miami to become a destination spot for all Latin players, because, you know, this is such an international city. And, you know, we have been extremely aggressive in trying to acquire additional international dollars, not just for, you know, potential free agents with two first names, but, you know, knowing that the international market is one where we can make a huge dent and really take advantage of who we are and where we are to continue to add. I mean, you think about, you know, the few, you know, Latins that we have, but, you know, we have Jose Urena in our rotation, who was an international sign, you know, Martin Prado and Miguel Rojas, both internationally signed players. I think you look across rosters in Major League Baseball, and there's a definite international component to every roster. And it's an applicant pool where, when you have, you know, smart and aggressive scouts, and, you know, under Gary Dembo and Fernando Seganal, we've been extremely aggressive and active and bringing talent into the organization. And, And I think that's an area where, you know, we needed to get better, and we are, and we have. And I look forward to continuing to push in that area.
All right. Well, I look forward to that press conference if that ends up happening too. And then the jersey will determine what he has on the back. Players weekend could be an issue though, because I mean, he already has the Victor at that point. I don't know what you guys would do. You have to come up with something. All right. So
Roger.
Look at you, Mike. Yeah. Man, you're throwing all the movie references out there. That's good. Okay. So let's have some fun here for the end. We've done all the tough stuff. Let's do the easy stuff here before you go. And Mike Hill is with us, and he's given us so much of his time. We really appreciate it on the first episode here of Swings and Mishes. Okay. So here we go. Mike, I'm going to ask you a set of five questions. If I'm right, you tell me that's a swing. If I'm wrong, you say it's a mish. I know you'd love to be. You'd love for me to be wrong on all of these. That would make it a lot more fun. Here we go. Question number one for Mike Hill. Swing or mish? Mike Hill will run another worldwide marathon in the future. Is that a swing or a mish?
That is the largest mish in the history of mishes. I was fortunate enough to honor my father and raise a lot of money running across the world, but that is 1,000% one and done. I'll be running the world again.
Yeah, making trades from planes too. All right, question number two, swing or a mish? Mike Hill has made one trade via text messaging only in the past year, or maybe even ever, I should say. So Mike Hill has made a trade with another team, but only via text messaging. You never spoke to the guy on the other end of the line. Is that a swing or a mish?
That's another mish. I mean, text, when you have multiple phones working, you have to, you know, use text sometimes. But no, I don't think I would ever feel comfortable making a trade only via text. I like to hear my counterparts. I like to get a feel for what they're saying, what they're thinking. And I don't think you can get that via text message.
Okay. That's the way we kids do it now, Mike, you know, I'm as old as you. Anyway. Okay. The best player, swing or a mish? The best player that Michael Hill has ever seen out of high school, because some people don't even realize that you've been part of both organizations, the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, the Miami and Florida Marlins. The best player Michael Hill has ever seen come out of high school was named Josh Hamilton. Is that a swing or a mish?
Can I get a qualifier here?
Because yeah,
you know, I played professional baseball, and I played against the greatest player I think that I've ever seen. I have two buckets. I have players that I played with and against, and then players that I've scouted. So which is this? Is this a swing and miss for me as an evaluator, or me all inclusive, including my playing days?
Well, I was gonna throw you nice love there for the playing days. You had to bring that up. You know, I was gonna get to that.
Oh.
This is as an evaluator,
okay, I'm sorry. Right?
As an evaluator, swing or a miss? Okay. Because I remember hearing stories about this that were legendary. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, you're right. He was our first pick. The first pick, 1-1 in 1999. I think I saw him play four or five times. He came out of Athens Drive High School in Raleigh, North Carolina. 6'4", 195 pounds. Hit the ball 500 feet. Threw up to 95 off the mound. Was a gazelle in the outfield. Hands down, he was the best amateur player I've ever seen.
All right. And the player that you said, the bucket list that you played against, real quick, give me that one.
Ken Griffey Jr., Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yeah, you said that.
He by far was the greatest player I've ever seen played against. Just an unbelievable talent from the second you laid eyes on him. And he's in Cooperstown.
All right, swing or a mish, Mike. People don't know that you were also a great football player as well. Football season is coming. So here's the question. Swing or a mish, Mike Hill was a better football player than baseball player throughout high school.
You're right. I was a better football player. I was in a lot better shape than I am now. I was a running back a decent one, I'd have to say. And I was probably a better football player than baseball player.
What happened?
I just made a conscious decision that you know, I felt like I could have a longer career playing baseball than football. I ended up, as you know, playing college football and college baseball, and had a choice. I could have gone to either combine, and chose to go to the baseball one.
Yeah, that ice cream machine ruined a lot of careers, Mike, up in that press box, man. The question, the last question for Mike Hill before we let him go. He's given us a lot of time today. We really appreciate it. And I think that this is the one that the fans are going to be most interested in hearing. Swing or a miss, the Marlins will make the postseason in the next 5 years, Mike. Swing or a miss?
Wow. You give me the one. I'll put my dancing shoes on here. What I will say for you, Craig, and for all of the fans is that, you know, there are definitely exciting things going on with the Miami Marlins. We're extremely happy with where we are going, the talent that we have brought in, that we will continue to bring in, and exciting for what the future holds. And I will say that at some point, you know, we'll be bringing another championship here to South Florida.
No, I think a lot of people want to hear that. 1997, 2003, and you know, certainly a different way of doing things now, Mike. You've been part of it for a long time. It would be really nice to see you raising that trophy again for sure. Thank you so much for all the time that you've given me today on our first episode here of Swings and Misses. And Mike, thank you so much for really always giving me time through the years too, both on radio and television. Thank you again. Appreciate you doing it.
Oh, my pleasure, Craig. Thank you.
Nosotros somos 5 Razones Podcast, el primer podcast en español del network de 5 Reasons.
Lo que más me gusta, y es una de mis 5 razones, es that I can speak in English. Everything Miami regarding the sports.
Junto a Alejandro Villegas y a Leandro Soto, yo soy Ricardo Montes de Oca.
Bye, have a great time.
5 Razones, el nuevo podcast, aquí con Leandro y Ricardo, debatiendo como siempre, llevándonos la contraria. Les va a gustar.
Pregúntale a Siri.
Siri, would you make José Ureña a closer?
Here's what I found.
Ah, mira, me da,
te dio muestra, las estadísticas.
Muestra. Sí, me da unos lugares que no puedo mencionar.
Enjoy the ride.
All right, Craig. Well, that was a lot of information from Michael Hill. He was joining us as the president of baseball operations for the Miami Marlins. Long form interview with you. Lots of conversation covered, ranging from, you know, the minor league system to guys that were once with the team that are now superstars in the major leagues. First, why don't you just give me your overall impressions of what Michael Hill had to say in your conversation?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, Mike has been with the team for a long time, as he mentioned, 16 years, and he's seen a lot of different things. I mean, he has seen, and you know, honestly, a circus for a long right. period of time. I mean, there were some good times, don't get me wrong, 2003. You know, it was a great year, and you know, they still tried. The previous owner tried. It's just what the process didn't always, you know, get to the results. In fact, almost never did it get to the results, with the exception really of 2003. And then, of course, let's also understand that the past cannot be told without the passing of José Fernández. It's a very important part of Marlins history.
Of course.
And arguably what really set everything in motion to what I think ended up happening right now, which is an unsustainable product, losing a lot of games. It's part of the Marlins history. But I think that, you know, what was really evident from that are a couple of things. The first thing is that the Christian Yelich trade that Mike talked about is really going to be, in terms of what happened in the offseason, the stamp as to whether or not this works or not. I don't think that trade will make or break an organization, because one player, Jeremy, doesn't do that. And I think that'll have to come through the draft.
Right.
And the Marlins draft 5th or 6th next year. They had a lot of draft picks this past year. That's why this team is not a year or two away. They're years away, because when you're building through the draft, that's what has to happen. And then you go out and you get a couple of free agents to fill in the blanks. But the key here is that it does really feel like the Marlins are going to make a strong effort toward the international market. And as jokingly, kind of as Mike talked about Victor Mesa, and we don't know what kind of player Victor Mesa is going to be. Nobody knows. No one knows what kind of player Lewis Brinson is going to be. These players, you don't know when you get them. But it is exciting if you are a Marlins fan to say, hey, this is something that in general in the past this team didn't do anything of. Only the Orioles spent less money internationally than them. And we've talked about this a bunch. The rookie of the year in the National League is going to be Ronald Acuna, or it's going to be Juan Soto, one of those two guys.
Right.
In the American League, it's probably going to be Gleyber Torres, and if it's not him, it's going to be Miguel Andujar. I mean, these are all international players. Mm-hmm. And the Marlins have just chosen in the past to just treat these as coin flips and not go for them. And look, there may be some essence to that. Not all 10 kids that you sign internationally are going to work out, but you can't ignore them and you can't not spend money on them. And to me, that is the most encouraging part of this, is that we don't know if they're going to land this kid. And we don't know, Jeremy, if this kid is going to be good in the big leagues. We don't know. But the effort and the attempt to do it is key. And again, process doesn't always equal the result you want. But if they're not going to be in on international players, they're not going to win. And I think that he made it pretty clear that they are. So that was a positive that I got out of that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more in terms of the international players. It's just nice to see the Marlins in a space where they're willing to take a shot, where they're willing to put in the effort to bring in these international players and build them themselves. And that's one thing that Michael Hill talked about that I found really interesting, was talking about how he really believes that the way that they're training their players at the minor league level is going to make a difference from where things were in the past. And, you know, you see the way that they built things up, and they did bring up some of their own prospects, some guys that Michael Hill was a part of drafting, just like Giancarlo Stanton, who is going to be here today. It's nice to see that they have that effort instilled there within the organization to say, this is how we're going to do things. These are the types of players we're going to draft. These are the risks that we're going to take internationally, and the willingness to go out and make that happen.
Yeah, and we'll see. You just don't know how these things are going to work out. Stanton kind of, you know, slipped through the cracks. I mean, if there's ever another body like Giancarlo Stanton involved in the Major League Baseball first year draft, he's going in the first round. I don't know. I mean, that was a scouting failure on a lot of other teams, and Mike and the previous regime does deserve credit for that. So that's the positive. You know, obviously the on-field product this year, we didn't really get into all that much because I just don't think it's necessary. Wins and losses with a lot of the guys that they had are not going to be on this team in a few years. But candidly speaking, and the reason why I asked and then even pressed even further with the Christian Yelich trade is because, look, right now, optically, the trade does not look good for the Marlins. Right. You know, they traded Christian Yelich, who has taken himself to another level under a team-friendly contract. And at the present moment, with not enough sample, that is clear, but with not enough sample, you know, it has not worked out. Lewis Brinson is going to need to do a lot more work to get to become an all-star. He could become an everyday player at some point, but that is a failure on my part too. Going into the offseason, I thought he would be good, but I'm not running the Marlins. I'm just evaluating from the perspective that I am here in this chair. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be the one that you're going to have to circle and see, because I think that there's no way to determine a winner and loser of that deal now, just like any other trade. But at least for the time being, unless Diaz comes up and becomes a capable big league player and Harrison cuts down on the strikeouts, and again, maybe he can. Yamamoto, I'm not really sure what he'll end up being. Mm-hmm. But I would say, even though that Mike didn't say it, that the centerpiece of the deal was Lewis Brinson. He was one of the top prospects in the Brewers organization. It was their choice to take him in this trade. And as hard as he's worked, and as good as he's been in the clubhouse, and as many TV interviews as he's done, the on-field product this year, it just hasn't been good. So hopefully, for the Marlins' sake, he ends up being improving and getting better. I don't know that I've seen players, Jeremy, go from 240, 250 on base, 170 average, striking out 30% of the time, becoming all-stars. I don't see that. I haven't seen that in the past, unless they're Mike Trout, who did have a poor first year and came through.
Right.
But we have to, at least for the time being, give that trade the benefit of the doubt and allow at least another year to see what happens with this deal. It cannot be judged right now, but we also have to call it fairly and say Yelich has gone to another level,
mm-hmm.
and the players that they got back in return haven't been great, at least in their first year, but they're developing, and we'll see if that plan works.
Right. And luckily for us, we'll be doing this podcast next year as well, and we'll be taking this into the 2019 season tonight. We will see what happens as the Marlins take on the Yankees and one of Christian Yelich's former teammates down here, Giancarlo Stanton, the former NL MVP. Thank you to Mike Hill for joining us on the first episode of Swings and Mishes. For Craig Mish, I am Jeremy Taché. Continue to tune in. We will let you know when our next podcast will be coming out. This will happen either weekly or bi-weekly throughout the rest of the season and into the 2019 season. Craig, thanks for conducting the interview and sticking along with me here on Swings and Mishes.
All right. A lot of swings and a lot of mishes, as usual, on this podcast. Thanks a lot, Jeremy. Appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, everyone.